Good morning. I'm Christopher Purdy. Thank you for your company and welcome to a special edition of All Sides Weekend as we celebrate Pride. And I am delighted to welcome three guests to the conversation, talking all about Pride activities, what Pride is, what the community is, how friendly the community is, how friendly the state of Ohio is. There are items in the news we're going to talk about, and we're also going to talk about arts and culture and the great contributions of the LGBTQ plus community on this program on All Sides Weekend. And I am delighted to welcome Brayton Bollenbacher, who is the artistic director of the Columbus Gay Men's Chorus. They have been for many years an important part of our local concert life, and they've also had quite a reach outside our area as well. Q Jones is also known as Greta Goodbottom. He is fresh. Greta is fresh from a triumphant appearance last night at the Wexner Center with Opera Columbus. We will talk more about that. Q is a musician and performer. And the last time I saw you, you were playing the harpsichord in a contemporary music concert at Capitol.
Yeah, with a Ukrainian composer.
That's right, of which you are an alumnus of Capitol. In the School of Music.
And I'm actually faculty there as
well. Oh, well, we'll get into that as well. And Chris Kozod is here. She, for many years, was the producer of the Ohio Lesbian Festival. She is the owner of Alternative Auto Care in Columbus, which is an all-women operated business. And you've had that business for a number of years, isn't that correct?
I have. 42-ish years.
Okay, well, welcome all, and thank you all for being here. Let me start with you, Chris Kozod. When we say Pride in the context of what's going on this month, and specifically tomorrow with the march, what are we talking about?
Well, we could be talking about a lot of different things. Pride is important. I had to speak last week at Upper Arlington Pride, and I talked to my daughter, and I said, the theme is love. And I'm an activist, and I'm a call-to-action kind of person, so I was like, love. And she said, well, Mom, Pride is about learning to love ourselves. Lead with that. And so I did. And so Pride is about love. It's about building community. It's about connection. But it's also a social movement. It's a protest. It's empowerment. It's a lot of things. And it's not the same thing to everybody, but it is a blast. I chaired Pride for 10 years back in the 80s, so I am Pride history proficient.
I think when they say Pride, most people will think of the march or the parade, which is tomorrow.
Right.
It's leading off, I believe, at 10:30 from the State House and ending in Goodale Park.
Correct.
Is my understanding. It is a march that began, the first one, I believe, was in 81. Mm-hmm. And you told me off mic, you were at the second one in 82.
That's correct.
What was that like?
It was pretty intimidating and scary. Lots of folks with bags on their heads or balloons in front of their face. The media was there. Of course, the TV was there, and everyone was trying to avoid the cameras. We are a lot freer and a lot more able to be out now. Of course, it was way smaller, too. There were a few hundred people there. And it was fun, but it was a little scary at times. Back in the day, we had a lot of protesters, a lot.
A lot of people coming to make trouble or coming to,
So
was threatening. Did you feel threatened marching? What you're walking out in a public area and anybody could come up to you or do whatever they wanted back 40 plus years ago.
Right.
They still can, sadly enough. But today, I think I read an estimate of 300,000 people are expected. I mean, it's a huge undertaking in terms of the people who are involved, the people who are marching, the people who are making it happen. And again, it is tomorrow at 10:30 leading off from the State House. But when we say Pride, and Q, let me ask you, the march is just part of it, isn't that correct? There's a lot more going on.
Absolutely. So this is Pride Month, and we have been celebrating since day one, and we will celebrate to the end of June. Pride is a million shows, spectacles, events. So last night you said I was at the Wexner. We had an event called Drinks and Drag, where we had opera singers in full drag performing. Such a fun thing. I'll be with the Columbus Gay Men's Chorus next weekend at their concert band, which Brayton is going to talk all about. You can catch me in hotel lobbies. You can catch me at any bar around town. You can catch me... I'm riding two floats in the parade. That's how big the parade is.
How are you doing that? You're going to jump off one and jump on the other?
I am. Yes. So if you've ever marched in the parade and been at the back, it kicks off at 10:30, but right. you may not move till 11:15, 11:30.
So 1 p.m.
1 p.m.
So are you going to be like Santa Claus in the Macy's parade where they stop in front of Macy's for like 20 minutes and work the crowds?
Oh, I hope. I hope not, because that would just slow down everyone in the back.
Good.
As a former organizer, we hated that.
Yes.
And Brayton Bollenbacher, I know you as Jared, but I'm calling you Brayton now because you're...
Well, you knew me when I was a gaby.
Okay. That's a new term for me, but very good. All right. You are the artistic director of the Columbus Gay Men's Chorus. You are continuing a wonderful tradition with that organization. There are actually, there are like three choruses under that rubric, right? There's a little.
Well, yeah. So we have the large chorus, which right now has 130 plus singers in it. And you can be gay, lesbian, bi, trans, queer, and we have a lot of allies. So a lot of different identities in that. And then we have two small ensembles. One is Illuminati, which is very unique in that it's one of the only LGBTQ organization choruses that specifically only does sacred music. And so they go around, and once a month they'll do an outreach to a different sacred congregation. And then we have an audition group called Vox, which they are mostly our gig singers. So they have to be in the large chorus to be in that group. And this month have been very booked because sometimes I need the large chorus, but sometimes I need a small group, and so they have to go.
How many concerts a year does the large chorus do?
So they do three different concerts, but then each concert has two performances.
So
that
three different programs repeated.
Correct.
Right.
This year has been a little different because we sang at the Ohio Music Education Association event in February, which was great. We were the first LGBTQ chorus to perform at OMEA. And then there's a big festival in July.
What took them so long?
Well, you know, you have to audition for it. So,
oh, okay.
So that's the thing. You know, a lot of community chorus, they only allow one community chorus to perform each year. And so you have to be pretty well organized. And then there aren't a lot of LGBTQ community choruses in the state. I think there's four right now. And so then you have to audition, and we were lucky enough to get it. And then also this year we're performing in July in Minneapolis at a big festival for all the gay and lesbian choruses across the United States and some from the world. So there are groups from Beijing, there are groups from Europe that are coming. There's a couple of South American groups. So it's a very busy choral year.
What's happening next weekend? Q was mentioning.
Yeah, we're so excited. So I'm a huge fan of Q and Greta's. And so because Greta does Don't Tell Greta at District West. And so
every Sunday at 5.
And it's great. And Greta also, you can talk about Greta, but I saw it and I was so excited by the show. And we are doing a concert called Banned, B-A-N-N-E-D, which focuses on all the things that legislatures are banning right now. So, and, you know,
going to be a long concert.
Yeah, so there's a lot. So, you know, the focus is on women's rights. The focus is on trans individuals. Focus is on drag performers, of course, and then books, and then also immigrant stuff. So there's a lot of stuff in there. And we are so fortunate that we have such a vibrant drag community here in Columbus. And I like the campy drag, which is really great in Columbus. And Greta is a great example of she's just great at that. So she's going to be our hostess for that. And, you know, it'll be a very powerful concert. It'll also be pretty intense. But that's kind of the state of the world right now.
Where and what time and where?
So it's at the Rife Center in the Davidson Theater, and it's going to be on March 22nd, which is at 7:30 p.m., and then on March 23rd at 2 p.m. I'm sorry. Oh, my gosh.
June.
Welcome to Pride Month.
We either missed it or Maya. It's a while. Get your calendar.
Yeah, sorry. I don't know where March is fun, but
it's next weekend.
It's next weekend, and you can buy tickets at cgmc.com. There's still some available, but they are going fast.
I bet they are. Mm-hmm. Well, we're glad to know that. Let me ask you, Q, about being a drag performer and being Greta Goodbody. And in case you've missed it, it's one of the same person.
In
different
iterations. So she occupies
iterations.
Two halves of my brain.
Right, okay. Do you turn Greta on or off depending on where you are or what happens in where you are in your daily life?
Absolutely. She is a fully...
How does that work?
I mean, I think it's the same way when you're acting or things. Yeah. And you step out on stage and you step into this person and you feel different. You hold yourself differently. You move differently. You say different things. So Q is very this.
That's you. That's who I'm talking to now. Right.
You're talking to Q right now. And Q is very professional and organized and works and like is detail oriented. Is almost type A.
Plays the harpsichord.
Plays the harpsichord.
Which is some, you know, that's pretty esoteric. Yeah. Yes.
Greta is this wild, free, very improvisatory person. She doesn't really plan anything. She just kind of goes with what's happening in the moment. So it's very exciting for Q to let go that way and to have that freedom.
To be Greta, do you have to be dressed as Greta?
I do.
Okay. So they go hand in hand. The external goes with the internal.
Yeah. And I've learned that it's specifically the corset. I have like a steel-boned corset that when I
well,
put...
Well, who knew?
Yeah.
Glad
so
I
when
asked.
I put that on and lace it, it changes my posture and then all of a sudden Greta's in the room.
Greta said, when was Greta born? When did Greta make her debut?
Greta is 13 years old, and Greta is not good at math, so I cannot tell you what was 13 years ago.
Q probably is good at math because Q's a musician, but Greta, yes. So yes. Did Greta have a predecessor?
No, so Greta is part of the West family. So for those of you who don't know, drag is organized into family groups, and this predates YouTube and technology. So a lot of the younger queens now don't really have that. But, you know, back in the day, when you wanted to learn how to do makeup, you couldn't just walk into Dior and say, give me makeup for drag. They'd be like, what are you talking about? So you would go to the older drag queens in the community and you'd shadow them and you'd learn and they'd help you find places to buy clothes and shoes and hair and everything that you need to do drag. So the West family, who's our matriarch is Virginia West, and she is one of the owners of District West in downtown Columbus. And then her daughter is, you may know, Nina West, currently on RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars. And then Nina West is actually my mother.
Andrew's been a guest here. Nina hasn't, but I'd love to have Nina. But Andrew's been a guest on the show a couple of times, yes.
Yeah, well, if you want to find her tonight, you can find her at Kemba Live hosting the big Pride kickoff party that they have there.
We are talking about Pride on this edition of All Sides Weekend. I'm Christopher Purdy with Brayton Bollenbacher, who is the artistic director of the Columbus Gay Men's Chorus, with Chris Cozad, who was a producer of many years of the Ohio Lesbian Festival. I'm going to ask Chris about that. And we have just been talking with Q Jones, who is also known as Greta Goodbottom. Okay, in my ignorance, what's the difference between a drag and a female impersonator, or is there one?
I think it is all semantics in how you want to call it. So drag is the general term for any art form that messes with the perception of gender. And it has nothing to do with your gender that you are assigned or that you feel. It has to do with how you outwardly present. So I am a very vintage drag queen. I love the pinup girls from like the 40s, that whole style. So my aesthetic is like heels, big hair, wigs, styled. Dresses, lots of makeup, large lips, large eyes, curves, that kind of thing.
And it must take a long, you must be very committed. It must take a long time.
It does. Yeah, it is a process. It is a process.
We are going to take a quick break now and come back and talk more. And I'm going to ask Chris Cozad because Chris and I, these two children, I mean, we are closer in age and maybe have a different perspective. Don't go away. More coming up from All Sides Weekend. We'll be right back.
I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go. There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. But on Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's a new podcast from NPR where I invite actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to talk about some of life's biggest questions. Listen to Wildcard wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.
We are back talking about Pride, Columbus Pride 2024 with Brayton Bollenbacher, the artistic director of the Columbus Gay Men's Chorus, Q Jones, a.k.a. Greta Goodbottom, and Chris Cozad. Let me ask you, Chris, you for many years produced the Ohio Lesbian Festival. What was that, and is it still around?
It is not still around, unfortunately. The pandemic shut us down, and we don't have a venue at the moment, but it could come back. So the women's music movement started in the 70s, and really, a big piece of it was a response to Anita Bryant. We talked about this at the filming of the...
They weren't born, but you and I remember.
I just saw Sarah McLachlan last weekend at Red Rocks, who started the All Women Music Festival.
She's one of the performers. But anyway, so that's kind of when lesbian musicians and folk singers and what have you started writing music and singing songs and doing concerts. And it kind of evolved into festivals where we'd have a, you know, lesbians like to camp. So we'd have in the tent sense.
You mean with tents and sleeping bags, right?
Right. Okay. But we'd have like weekend festivals and have a stage and have, you know, 8 or 9 performers throughout the weekend. And we did that in Ohio here for 30 years. For many years, it was at Frontier Ranch out in Licking County, which was a big joke, the Licking Lesbians. but we didn't own the venue, obviously, so we rented it. And it's hard to find venues where you can do large outside events like that now.
Do you see a way for it to come back?
I don't think it's really gone. I just think it's transformed. We do it much more now in concert halls and hotels. And there's a National Women's Music Festival in Madison, Wisconsin, that is all in a hotel rather than tent camping, of course. But it's the same idea, multiple stages. Women come with their crafts and their art, jewelry, clothing, what have you. And it's a big festival. It's just fun. Very fun.
You know, it really parallels, sorry to jump in, but it really parallels the queer choral movement as well, because in the 70s, really that's when we were starting to see these queer choral organizations. So, you know, prominently in Philadelphia and San Francisco were the starting with Anacrusis, which is an all women's chorus. Mm-hmm. It's evolved a little bit. And then right around the time of Harvey Milk, the San Francisco gay men's chorus. And then they just really started in the 70s and 80s, started mm-hmm. booming. And of course, HIV even brought more choruses in with that. So, I mean,
remember
very
when the
parallel.
Columbus gay men's chorus started.
Yeah.
I want to ask you all about something that was sent to me. It's from a website called safehome.org, and it grades states for their in terms of their safety for persons in the LGBTQ plus community. And Ohio got an F, and I was shocked at that. I was very surprised at that. And I said to you earlier that if you don't leave your bubble, you get shocked at stuff like this, and I tend not to leave my bubble. It means that... There's a high rate of hate crime, and it's very difficult. And I wondered does this ring true to you? That
it absolutely rings true. Hate is alive and well everywhere, but certainly in Ohio. You know, the big cities, Columbus, Cleveland, Cincinnati, Toledo, are safe havens for us, and so we tend to cluster. That's why, you know, Columbus has a reputation of being one of the best places to live and be gay in the country. And it's because there's a perception of safety here because there's safety in numbers. Not that there aren't problems, because there certainly are, and there are attacks. And I was the president of the board of Bravo, the Buckeye Region Anti-Violence Organization, for 22 years. That organization has... dwindled in its effectiveness over the years somewhat, but that happens with small nonprofits. But we tracked hate crimes for many, many years. And it's June is the single biggest month every year. Pride Month has the most hate crimes all over the country, even in Columbus. And some of them are property crimes, like rainbow flags being stolen, vandalism, things like that. And people... I've always encouraged people to report. You know, we used to report to Bravo, but you can still report to the police. Not that they're going to be able to do anything, but it tracks the trends.
When you say they can't do anything, really specifically, what do you mean? Do they ignore the complaint, or is it just hard to track down who's doing what?
Exactly. It's hard to track down. Right. They don't ignore. The Columbus Police Department takes it pretty seriously, and they take the report, and they watch trends. I remember one time, this was several years ago, there was a whole rash of rainbow flags being stolen and burned and vandalized in the Clintonville area, which is where I live. And we turned in, I think, 12 or 13 reports in a week within about a 6-block radius.
I went through 6 last year,
yeah,
through June. Just, I would come out and be gone from the front of my porch, yep, and I'd pull another one out and put it up.
Exactly. And... you have a drawer full of them, right?
I was going to say, do you have a whole bunch of them at home?
You have a whole bucket. Yeah. Ready to go.
Right? Exactly. Yeah. But we called the police and we said, look, we've had, you know, 12 of these reports in this neighborhood. They increased patrols. And it was kids. They caught the kids. And
was it just kids being kids, or was there an element of maliciousness?
There was an element of maliciousness, okay, but they were, you know, 14, 15-year-old boys.
Okay.
So they tend to be malicious just by nature.
By nature. Brayton, you were talking about your social media presence.
Yeah.
What's going on?
So we...
Meaning the Gay Men's Chorus.
Yeah, not mine personally.
Yeah.
So we were doing Downtown Pride West Weekend, and a couple of our singers were interviewed. And, you know, I mean, we always have a couple of comments throughout the year because we post videos and whatnot. And sometimes there's drag, and sometimes there's just us kind of being... gay. But we had a couple singers that were on 10 TV, and the amount of vile rhetoric that started to pollute our social media after that was just astounding. And, you know, I think, you know, as Chris is talking about the big...
Is it this year most recently that it was worse?
I mean, it always happens during Pride. It happens anytime that any of our social media blows up. You know, we're on TikTok and we're on Facebook and Instagram and all that. So anytime that anything gets really big or we're on TV, we see more of it. But, you know, as Chris was saying that, you know, we have these very liberal cities. And I think as much as we as queer people like to be by queer people and near queer people, I think that our country is so unable to have actual conversations. And when they don't, when people who are in small towns or maybe in more conservative areas don't see people who are queer in their everyday life, then we start to be painted as villains. And so us going to communities where we feel safe is really important to us. But at the same time, then we're not able to have these same conversations that we would if we lived in places where some of these more conservative thoughts are.
Well, to the point, though, when I was very young, queer was pejorative.
Yes.
And now it's apparently no longer. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so it's been a reclaiming act. We have the acronym LGBTQIA2+, which are all separate.
That's a lot to say.
It is. And we are this inclusive community that loves everyone, and anyone who feels marginalized gets welcomed into our fold. And so the name keeps getting longer. And eventually it's going to be so long that no one's ever going to say it. So now it often gets abbreviated to LGBTQ+, but then you're lumping all these people into this plus rather than saying their specific identities. So we've used kind of queer as like our reclaiming of the word to be this blanket term for this whole community and to cover everyone under this umbrella.
What is House Bill 245?
That is affectionately known as the drag ban. It is a drag and trans ban that would make a felony out of performing drag in any capacity that a child could see it. So the language is extremely vague, is extremely unhelpful, but under the current proposed legislation, if I drove to the drag bar and was walking from my car inside and a child was walking by on the street, that would be a felony.
Yep.
It's hard to know what to say to that. I mean, yeah. On the one hand, I guess I can, you know, I'm just playing devil's advocate here. I mean, You know, a parent should be able to say what they do when they don't want their child to be exposed to, but you can't keep the kid in the house, locked in the house.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you're living in the world with all kinds of different people, and some of them aren't like you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Maybe if politicians focused on fixing the roads and fixing the jobs and fixing the health insurance instead of fixing on maybe seeing a drag queen walk across the street, our country would be in a lot better place.
It would be a little bit less of a problem.
Exactly. And I'm also a mom. And my drag queen friends helped raise my kids. And, you know, I'm a butch lesbian. I don't know, from makeup. So when my youngest daughter went to her high school prom, I called my drag queen friends. And they did her hair and her makeup and helped her pick out her gown because that's not my area. And then a couple of years ago, I won a big award from the YWCA Women of Achievement. And they're like, show up in makeup. I'm like, makeup.
They told you that? Really?
Yeah. They said, come. I had to go to makeup in makeup.
Oh.
I'm like, oh, you don't. So I called one of my drag queen friends, Vivi Velour, is a dear friend of mine.
Oh, I love Vivi.
And Vivi laughed at me unmercifully. Vivi was who did my daughter's makeup for her prom. But, you know, he's like, okay, I'll take care of you. And came over and loaned me some makeup. And it was quite funny. But, you know, they help raise my kids.
Yeah.
And my kids are better for it. And it's just so...
That's like a bumper sticker. That's perfect. I love that. They raised my kids and the kids. They helped raise my kids and the kids are better for it.
Absolutely.
Because they got love.
They got love. They got exposure to lots of things. I mean, you know, we didn't take them into the bars for a late night drag show until they were of age. But, you know, they knew. They rode on the pride floats with the drag queens. And, you know, they understood that it was, you know, people.
Q, can Greta earn a living? Does Greta make her own living doing what she does?
If Greta only ate ramen noodles and drank tap water, Greta could probably eke by.
Doesn't sound like Greta to me, and I don't know Greta, but that's
No. Yeah, it is very much a gig economy thing. So it's part of a whole life. So almost every drag queen I know has a day job, has a something else that they do to make ends meet.
How old were you when you began to work in the drag as a drag performer, and what was that journey like, and what was it like at home?
Yeah, so I was 21, so I was in grad school at The Ohio State University, and started drag, and it was not an issue at all at home. My mom had a little bit of confusion because I think a lot of people get confused between the idea of trans identity and drag identity.
I have a little confusion. Maybe you could help us out with that. Yeah,
so it's how you feel. So when I dress up like Greta, I still feel like a man. I take Greta off and I am a man, and I wake up in the morning and I feel like a man. And there are some people that have my same physiological parts. I think I can say that on the radio.
Yes, you're fine. I'll let you know. You're fine.
Who wake up and they don't feel like a man. They don't feel that way. They feel as a woman, or they feel two-spirited or non-binary or any other individual identity. So it's about your internal feeling. So drag, I dress up and I poke fun at the societal stereotypes of gender and what we are expected to do and what people have expected throughout history to do. And trans individuals, they feel that way all the time. That is who they are.
So are you an illusionist? Is that fair?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a costume.
You're an actor. Now, as I said, I have yet to meet Greta, but I've seen Q perform.
Yeah.
At the keyboard and in classical concerts, I guess you could. What was that journey as a classical musician? And what is that role in your life?
Oh my gosh, it's my whole life. So, grew up taking piano lessons since I was 7. Went to Capital University for undergrad. While I was there, I had the pleasure of studying abroad at the Liszt Academy in Hungary.
Oh, Hungary, yeah.
Which was a magical experience and changed how I viewed the world. Came back, went to OSU and got my master's in composition. Did all sorts of accompanying while I was there, played for all the both bands, the orchestra, tons of solo recitals and things. And then drag came after all of that. And so when
what led you to drag? What was that moment that you decided you wanted to try this?
It was a Wednesday. And
ask a question, get an answer.
Yeah. And I was just very stressed. And Virginia West looked at me and was like, hey, you're here watching this show all the time. Do you ever want to do this? And I was like, I don't know. And she was like, well, you're going to do it next week. And the rest is history. And it just was, it was such a freeing feeling being someone else for a little bit.
Q Jones is a musician and a producer. Tell me, you just did a whole show at Opera Columbus.
I did, yeah. So we took The Magic Flute.
Mozart's opera.
Yeah, horribly sexist and racist libretto in the original form. So we rewrote the libretto. We shortened it for a modern audience. So we cut it from 3 hours down to 90 minutes and set it in a modern spin that spoke to regular people.
But you did that. You were the one who really rewrote it.
I did. Yeah, I rewrote and arranged the whole thing, and then I got to actually music direct it with the orchestra and all the opera singers.
Would you do that again with something else?
Absolutely. Yeah. I already have one in the works.
Terrific. Well, yeah, we'll talk about that later. We are talking about Pride. We're talking with three people who are a very, really important part of our local performing arts community, cultural community. They cross all kinds of genders, identification. They cross all kinds of roads to do what they do. Jared, I knew you as Jared when you were like 16. You're Brayton now.
I was in college. We were in the same college studio.
Yeah,
I wasn't
I'm
16.
Quite a bit longer, older than you are. Brayton Bollenbecker, I know you have a social work background. Is that correct?
Yeah. So after I got my undergraduate at The Ohio State in vocal performance, I ended up going to the University of Washington and getting a master's in social work. And then I got a master's in conducting at the University of Arizona. And now, in addition to directing the Columbus Gay Men's Chorus, I also am an adjunct professor in social work at The Ohio State University. So I'm able to use both of my social work and music all the time, and I love it.
Do you see clients as a social worker? Or
I do. I do them online, and I see them like twice a week. And I do a lot of couples, and I get a lot of queer clients because I think I'm one of the few queer people that's available on this network that I'm with. So it's interesting, and I like to do the practice. But honestly, the chorus has, you know, as a social organization, even though we are a music organization, there's a lot of social needs. And so
I was going to say that must come in very handy in your work conducting and running the chorus or any big performing arts organization.
I mean, the 130 personalities is a lot to manage. And so how do you navigate that when people aren't happy or they're upset or they don't feel good? Or
how often do you rehearse the chorus, the big chorus?
The large chorus is every Sunday, and then the small ensembles are every Wednesday.
Do you do both, the small and the...
I do vox, and I do the large chorus. Jordan Saul, who is a professor at The Ohio State University, is our Illuminati director, and she's the assistant.
She's new to the group as a...
Yeah, we just hired her this last year, and she's fabulous.
She is, indeed. We are talking about Pride. We're going to come back in one moment. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend. Don't go away.
I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go. There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. But on Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's a new podcast from NPR where I invite actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to talk about some of life's biggest questions. Listen to Wildcard wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.
We are back, All Sides Weekend. I'm Christopher Purdy. We're talking about Pride, the Pride Parade, the Pride March Parade, whatever you want to call it, steps off tomorrow morning at 10:30 from the State House and ends up at Goodale Park. There is a lot. This is Pride Month, which is produced, I think, by Stonewall Columbus. Am I correct there? And we are talking with three people who know something about that and a lot more. Brayton Bollenbacher is the artistic director of the Columbus Gay Men's Chorus. Chris Cozad, for many years, produced the Ohio Lesbian Festival. She is a business owner. And Q Jones, who was also Greta Goodbottom, depending on the day and time and what you're paying, frankly, because you don't be giving it away here, is a musician, a producer, a drag performer. And do you have a day job, Q?
I do. So I am actually the worship and arts director at Peace Lutheran Church in Gahanna, Ohio.
Terrific. Yeah. Does Greta go there?
Greta has never been there, but they are a very accepting, affirming, reconciling congregation. So they will be marching in the Pride Parade.
So if Greta decided to turn up one day, that would be cool, right?
I think so.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I might get some funny looks.
So are you the organist and conduct the choir and do that?
So our organist is David Fleischer.
Okay.
I play when he is on vacation or not away, but I conduct all three of our choirs and ensembles and produce both of our worship services.
Fantastic. Chris Cozad, you are a business owner, the Alternative Auto Care of Columbus. It's an all-women business owner. When did that begin?
I opened in 1983.
I wasn't born yet.
I was.
You know, and I had my toolbox in my truck and I worked on the street. Your street, my street, didn't really matter until the first winter. And that was a bad idea. So I got a little garage, and now I, 40 plus years later, am at the corner of 5th and Hunter in the Short North area. We're all women, and I am a passionate activist about women and non-traditional jobs in general, but in the automotive industry in particular, because A, there's a huge technician shortage, and the automotive industry has ignored 51% of the population in terms of a recruiting pool, and B, it's an opportunity for economic access for women, particularly, you know, single moms, moms who have not chosen, you know, college educations and all the loans and debt that goes with that, and they can make good money. And cars aren't going away. They're changing, but they're not going away anytime in my lifetime.
If you began in 83, then the cars you worked on then are going to be very different than the cars you work on now.
Absolutely.
True?
Okay. Absolutely.
So what kind of special skill would someone need before they, you know, presented themselves to you as a potential employee?
Well, I think one of the, well, you know, there's two answers to that. From a technical perspective, the a car is really a computer on wheels. The average sort of basic car has 15 to 18 onboard computer systems. Get into a high-performance car, a luxury car. You know, they can have, I had a Mercedes in a while back, 27 onboard computer systems. It's a STEM field. And so we need to be looking at science, technology, engineering, and math, and not the grease monkeys. You know, the stereotype of the shade tree mechanic is a thing of the past, and we have not, as an industry, truly addressed that. And honestly, the numbers aren't any better for people of color than they are for women. It's definitely very much a white, male, not college material, whatever that means.
So is that a barrier to anybody else entering the field? Because you just said there's a big shortage, and I would think if there's a shortage and people need jobs, I mean, that sounds like it could be a good career. It could be a good job if you're...
It is a huge barrier, and it's a great career. You know, I still love going to work every day. I don't work on cars every day anymore. I'm the boss, but I can if I have to. But I have great people, and I currently have three technicians. Two of them were my students. I taught automotive technology at Columbus State for 20 years. And two of them were my students. I've had other students come through. But it's an absolutely wonderful opportunity. You get to work with your hands. You get to use science, technology. You know, we need the computer geeks and the gamers. And, you know, there's plenty of women that do that. They just don't know that it's an option.
And I will say personally, they are so great because they are no nonsense. So, you know, when you go to the dealership and they're like, oh, you might want to do this. You might want to do this. And all of a sudden you're like, I came in for an oil change. Why is it $2,000? They are very like, no, no, no. You got another $60,000 on this. You got another, like, they are so transparent and clear.
Thank you.
That is an all-women business founded by a woman, and the woman is the boss as well. Let me ask you something. You said that you were at the second local Pride Parade, which was in 82 then. What's the difference beside age of being a person in the gay community then and now? Is it ever easier?
Yes.
Okay.
It's absolutely easier. And I'm not sure if that's in the context of our city and our culture or in the context of my own personal development, probably a bit of both. But I am out. I have the great privilege of being 100% out everywhere I go. You know, I'm out to my family, my friends, my neighbors, my employees, my customers, my everybody. And so that's a privilege, because a lot of people don't have that privilege. You were talking earlier about, you know, the small towns and the rural parts of our state, and it's not safe there. But I've made it safe for myself, and I hope that helps show people it can be done, and that they can take that first little step and begin to be their more authentic self. But I'm also a community activist, so I've helped to...
When you say that, what does that mean?
Well, I've been stirring the pot since I've been here, pretty much.
Chris is a pillar in the community of LGBTQ in Columbus. I mean, even though Chris and I don't know each other personally, I have known about Chris for 20-something years. I mean, she has just really raised the bar on what's safe and what we can do as individuals in the queer community in Columbus. And I mean, she's like a queer celebrity right here. Like, I mean, she really is. She's such a pillar.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I do it a lot. I mean, I do work within the community, like the festival. I was on Stonewall's board for many years. I was on Bravo's board for many years. But I also work with outside community organizations. I serve as Mayor Ginther's liaison to the LGBT community. I chair the Columbus Community Relations Commission. So I'm going to City Hall right after this, actually. I keep busy.
Well, clearly, I mean, you're also in demand. People keep asking you to do more and more, it sounds like. So, mm-hmm. I mean, if you wanted to retire, you probably can't. They wouldn't let you.
You know what? I wouldn't know what to do if I retired. I would be bored.
I feel the same way,
You know, I like to garden, and, I have a few little hobbies, but that's good for a weekend. It's not my life's work. I really feel like making people's lives better, whether that's in the LGBTQIAATS plus community. Sometimes I like to say the words just because I think we forget. Lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, questioning, intersex, asexual, two-spirit. And I'm sure I'm forgetting a few. But, the list goes on and on. But we sometimes lump it together and forget what the identities are. So I like to talk about that. I feel like I'm making a difference in women's lives around non-traditional jobs and access to economic equity. I also feel like I'm making an impact in the automotive industry because I go right in there with the boy shops and I give them what for about it. And I'm involved with some professional associations and I am me wherever I am.
Keep giving them what for. You can give me what for whenever you want. I think I'm delighted that you're here, and I agree with Brayton. I think absolutely you're like royalty.
Thank you.
It's wonderful to have you. What is Greta doing for the summer? What are you doing? It's a gig economy, you said. So what's the gig? Do you have a website?
I do. My website is don'ttellgreta.com. Don't tell Greta with two T's, Gretta. Named after Don't Tell Mama in New York City. And that is the name of my show every Sunday at 5 at District West. It is a live piano cabaret. So I'm there playing piano and I bring local singers in, Broadway stars, whoever I can get. And they come and it's a 2-hour and they sing and you have drinks and we play games and it's a lot of fun.
Tell me, now review again what you said about houses.
Drag families.
That's new to me.
So it predates like the YouTube and the social media and all of that, where a bar would have a family and that drag family ran the bar. So if you wanted to go and work at that bar, you would become a part of that family of that troupe of performers, kind of like a circus troupe or like WOSU is a radio station. So you would be one drag family and your competitors are another drag family. And I say competitors, we all love each other and we all work together.
Well, how the local drag culture in Central Ohio, how big is it?
It is huge.
Really?
We have one of the largest drag scenes in the country.
Where do you find them?
So if you start in Clintonville, you have Bossy Girls, you have O'Connor's Club 20. Moving down, you have Union and Axis in the Short North. Moving to the South Side, you have State Street, you have Cavan's Irish Pub, you have South Bend, you have Bosco's.
These are all bars?
And spaces where drag happens. And then downtown, you have Slammers and District West. And then going east, you have AWOL and Steel Mill and I'm sure I forgot.
And when you're not there, you're at Peace Lutheran Church in Gahanna.
I am. I'm playing the pipe
very
organ.
Rounded, well-rounded person. That's terrific. Are you not also on the faculty at Capitol?
I am. Yeah. So I teach a theory and audiation there. So I have all the first-year students. If you go to Capitol, you will have me as your professor.
I flunked that in 1975. We'll talk later. Not at Capitol. Anyway. Brayton, what's going on in the future? You have to remind us of the concert next weekend.
Yeah, so Band is next weekend, BANNED, at the Rife Center on June 22nd at 7:30 p.m. and June 23rd at 2 p.m. So we'd love to see you there. Tickets are available at www.cgmc.com. And then, of course, in July, we're doing the big festival with all the LGBTQ choruses from North America, Central America, you know, Europe, Asia. And then next year, we have a really exciting season. We start in October with our small ensemble doing a concert called Baddies, and then our holiday concert's called Light, Bright, and Gay, which we're really excited about, which is about lights and being bright and being gay. And then we are actually taking...
Are you in one venue or do you move around?
So we are pretty much now primarily at the Rife Center, either in the Davidson or the studios that they have, but it depends on the concert. Illuminati, our sacred group, will perform at different churches through their concerts, most recently at Worthington United Methodist. And then next year, our board has taken the brave and exciting step to go ahead, and we're going to start a youth chorus. As you may know, things are difficult for a lot of our LGBTQ youth, especially our trans youth, and so we want to find a place for them that they can make music together. And so we felt like it was the right time. So,
do they have to have parental consent to come and sing with you? Yeah,
they
how
do.
Does that work?
Yeah, so they do have to have parental consent. And the thing is that the age will be from 13 to 18, and we only keep 18-year-olds if they are essentially graduating, you know, that year, like they're seniors. So the moment that they hit 19, they're out on to other things, so they could join the large chorus. But yeah, they'll have to have parental consent, and they have to have a media release, and we'll have, you know, enough adults to make sure that their safety is intact wherever we are rehearsing.
When does that start?
So that's going to start. We're going to start the planning here in September. And then our goal is to have our, because we're going to hire an assistant director for that in October, November to start the recruiting and marketing. And then we'll probably start rehearsals in January. And then their first performance will be in April. We're really excited about it.
Yes, the ever-expanding Columbus Gay Men's Chorus. And one more thing I wanted to ask you about Illuminati, which is the sacred music component. How many voices?
Right now, I think we're about 23. Both.
And where do I hear them? Because I love that repertoire.
Yeah, so they have a performance once a year that's their own in May, and then they do sing in the holiday show with the large chorus. And then every weekend, or not every weekend, every month they have one outreach performance, usually on Sundays because most of the places that they go are churches, but they also go to synagogues and any place that will really want them, they'd love there. And so for that information, it changes all the time, so you'd have to reach out to us at cgmc.com.
Okay, well, the information is there if you want it. Find the website. Chris Cozat, the parade is tomorrow. Is it a parade or a march, or do we care?
I like to think of it as a march.
Okay.
As I said, I chaired for many years, 10 years, 11 years back in the 80s, and it was a march.
Now, a march to me has, when you say march, it has more of a bit more of a political connotation.
Right. It's a social movement.
Right.
It's a civil rights march.
But
it's also a parade. And that's important, too. It's important to celebrate who we are and honor who we are and be out and, you know, we're here, we're queer, get used to it kind of thing, you know. So it's both. And I think each person has to make their own choice about how they feel about that. I have struggled some over the years back in the day where I really wanted it to be about civil rights and it was a march. And then I really, it's like, but it's fun. The floats are fun. The queens are fun. The rainbows and it's all of it.
Nothing wrong with fun.
Mm-mm.
Is there any pushback when you're actually out marching?
Yes.
Is there?
Oh yeah. There are, I chaired security for Pride for a couple of years before I chaired the whole thing. And the security in the 80s was challenging. I can't even imagine what it's like now. I mean, I know that Stonewall works very hard year-round with local law enforcement, the FBI, the, you know, U.S. Marshals, the county, the city, to make sure that people can stay safe and be out and gather and enjoy the festivities. But there's a lot going on behind the scenes, and there are... You know, we've had some pretty virulent protesters over the years, and I think that that's ramping back up again. It's kind of a wave. You know, it was bad in the 80s. I remember one year we had the festival at the I can't think of the name of the park, the one right over the Broad Street Bridge by what is now COSI.
Bicentennial Park? Or?
No.
Okay. No. I know what you mean.
The other side of the river.
I know what you mean, yeah.
And we crossed the Broad Street Bridge, and there must have been 1,500 protesters lining that bridge, praying over all of us. So that was very intimidating. And now I think the threat is different, or the fear of the threat is different. I don't think it's just being prayed over anymore.
No.
Now we're worried about
actual violence. I don't want to end on that note because we are finishing up now. Go enjoy, stand up, march, parade, and be safe. And my thanks to everybody who listened today, and my thanks to Brayton Bullenbacher from the Columbus Gay Men's Chorus, Q Jones, Greta Goodbottom, thank you. Have a great parade tomorrow. And Chris Cozat, thank you very much. I'm Christopher Purdy. This has been All Sides Weekend celebrating Pride. My thanks to Chris Johnston in the studio who... kept us on the radio, and my thanks to producer Marcus Charleston, who's waving to me through the glass. And thank you all for listening. Keep safe. March on.